When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gonna take it. Got it! Boston wins!
Two legends in basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
Welcome to another episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast. I'm Jeff Goodman. He is Bob Ryan, and we've got plenty to talk about, Bob. But I want to start on kind of a somber note. And you and I are obviously here in Boston, and we lost one of a rising young star in the game of basketball, and that is Terrence Clark, who passed away last week in a car accident out in L.A. I didn't know him well, Bob, but I knew him well enough. I watched him play plenty. I had talked to him on several occasions, including about a year and a half ago. My wife, my daughter and I drove up to Brewster Academy and watched him playing a game and talked to him for about 15 minutes afterwards. And just really, really, really sad, Bob, because he was a kid who, you know, had the world in front of him. Talented, talented kid. And, you know, what I tweeted when he passed was, and it's true, he always kind of had that smile on his face. And he was a kid that genuinely enjoyed talking to people, whether it was media, whether it was fans, whoever it was, and kind of embraced the fact that, you know, he was a star coming out of Boston. And not many guys, we haven't seen a lot of really good players come out of inner city Boston over the last decade or so. And he was going to be that guy. And he kind of embrace that. So really, really sad news for Terrence Clark, and obviously condolences to his family. I met his mother, met his younger brother and some of the people close to him. So again, just I still, you know, have the Boston Globe story from the day after he passed, and it's here on my desk, and it still hasn't hit me. You know, 19 years old, and again, the world at his fingertips. And he had just put out a tweet the previous day that he had signed with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports and was, you know, out in LA training for the draft.
What struck me was, as you've alluded to, his embracing of the Boston idea, that he viewed himself as an ambassador of Boston basketball. And he wanted to spread a gospel that there were good basketball players in Boston. He was aware of the history to a degree, apparently, of, you know, if you mentioned the name Jimmy Walker to him, it would mean something. At least that's what my impression. And that is an interesting young man in that regard. I didn't know him. I only know the numbers. I can't honestly say that I remember him from any time I saw Kentucky. Kentucky wasn't as visible in the last year as they have been, you know, as we know, for 50 years, it was. But all right, and I wondered whether he was smart to even put out in for the draft and all that. I didn't know him. But the reaction was just extraordinary, and I'm very impressed with the impact that he had in his young life on other people, the positive impact and the good vibes he left behind. That's why the nature of his death is so disturbing, so annoying, so wasted, so. Yeah. Awful. You know, he obviously was at fault. You know, there was nobody else to blame for reckless driving. It's so sad, you know, because if he had so much to offer. But anyway, you know, it just drives me crazy to think that it was also needless, you know, but he certainly left an image of a positive image behind.
Yeah. Wow. All the players who came out and tweeted about him. And, you know, I'll remember the conversation again that I had with my daughter Talia afterwards. And it was kind of right outside the locker room at Brewster Academy. And I've been there. I go there every year. and used to cover recruiting. So I know their coach, Jason Smith, well, and I had known Terrence. I had actually thought about, and we had talked about doing kind of a series with Terrence and, you know, every month kind of went, you know, checking in with him and seeing his recruitment and really leading up to going to college. And we never ended up doing it. And I feel bad that we didn't, but I remember after the game, you know, he didn't play great defensively. And, you know, I've always kind of taken it upon myself now as I've gotten older, not to lie to these kids in high school and try to be honest with them coming out of there. Cause so many people do lie to them and say, hey, you should have gotten more shots. Even when they didn't play well, right. You played great. Well, like that's not me. So after the game, I said to him, I said, hey man, you know, you got to be better defensively. And, you know, I think you got to be a better leader for this team too. You're kind of the guy that they all look to. And, you know, the one thing I'll give him a ton of credit for, he didn't roll his eyes. He didn't turn the other way. You know, he just looked at me and he was like, you know what? You're right. You're right. I'm going to try to do a better job of it. And he knew he had maturing to do, but I think he was going to do it. And I think, again, this is a kid who a lot of things came easy to him growing up. He was that good. He was that talented. And I think he had a chance to be a star in the NBA. And, you know, I'd see him after Celtics games, Bob, and he'd be talking to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Kemba. And those guys knew him. And
yeah, they knew him. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't just know him. They knew him. And I think he wanted to soak in as much knowledge as he could. And again, it just, it's so sad. And it does, listen, it is a teaching moment for a lot of kids.
They conveyed all this to Brad Stevens because Brad was really shaken up after the game and admitted that he didn't know him, but he felt as if he did. And obviously that means that he was getting the input from his players that did know him.
Yeah.
And so no, any time a young life is taken, we know it's sad. We know we all have that feeling. The this one happens to hit home because he's a Boston kid and we both very proprietary toward Boston. And my condolences, of course, to the family I just hope, you know, that the fact that the nature of his death it strikes home with all kids.
Yeah, whether, don't speak. We've all done it.
There's nothing to do with being an athlete. It has to do with, you know, when you get behind that wheel, you can't go crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. On to a little bit brighter things. And we'll talk about another former Kentucky player, somebody who's done an unbelievable job and now has help in Phoenix. And that is Devin Booker.
Oh, yes.
It felt like he's been doing it by himself the last couple of years. And obviously he was overmatched as a young prolific scorer in the league. Now he's got some help by the name of Chris Paul. And man, that duo right now, you know, they ended the Knicks winning streak last night. Not only that, but they've got a team right now that I think is capable of going deep in the playoffs and maybe to the NBA finals. I mean,
we have a recent analogy would be last year's Miami Heat in terms of the level that you view them at a certain point in time and then look and see what they were able to accomplish. And I think they maxed out. Right. Yeah. They maxed out. That was a tremendous achievement. If the Suns can emulate that, it would be a tremendous achievement. I still am hesitant to go that far. I will certainly put them in the category of a tough out. They're going to be a tough out. They're serious. I watched them the other day and you know, there's no question that they're a serious team. And by the way, oh, and everybody's got injury and sickness and knows we know that. But the fact is that their depth will be improved. I assume that they will get Crowder and Saric back eventually. And they're playing without them right now. And where they're going to need further depth, I think. But the Chris Paul phenomenon, I think we've talked about this a little bit. I have the mea culpa. It goes all the way back to when he was at Wake Forest. Because I saw him and I wasn't that dazzled. I never, ever would have projected Chris Paul into a Hall of Fame player, one of the great handful of point guards of all time, which he is, when I saw him in college. I'm sorry, I didn't see it. But anyway, what he's done with that and the impact he's had, we can't even imagine what the locker room impact is, what the mentor impact is, with, you know, we assumed it's got a lot to do with everything that's happening with Phoenix. in addition to the tangible fact that the guy can still play at a high, high level, as the Knicks found out in the last minute or so of the game last night. So
isn't it amazing that the two teams right now with the best records in the West are the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns? Like, if you, and I know part of it is due to injuries. Obviously we know LeBron and AD haven't played. And the Clippers, I feel like, though, have been so under the radar this season. Like, has anybody really talked about the, like, no, I feel like the Clippers, everybody's sleeping.
They're better off that way. There's no doubt. Yeah, no, they're right. You're right. They're quietly skulking, you know, around, and you know, they're going to be hurt. Oh, you know, they're going to be heard from. There's no doubt. Right. But the focus has been on Utah all year from start, you know, and start to finish. And so start to this point, I mean, and of course Phoenix, and, but the Phoenix, you have to go back to the bubble. And the 8-0, and yeah, the fact that it meant something, I think, but there's no doubt. And but you mentioned Booker. You know, we love talking about Booker. I go back. I'm sorry. I'm holding John Calipari responsible to eternity for not playing him more. They would have won. John, you would have had another championship. You had to play those Harrison twins. Really? Oh, really?
It was Booker and Ulis. It was both. Remember, the kid Tyler Ulis was better than the Harrison twins for that team. And instead – He was somehow married to playing too many guys
in the Harrison twins. He was so proud of himself. Yep. And I speak as a friend, as a good acquaintance of John. I like John. I mean, so believe me, I'm not. But boy, Booker, he's an elite player. Period. He's an elite player.
Well, they fit together, right? I mean, that's the thing with the Suns team, that James Jones, which I didn't think ever he would figure this thing out. I mean, his drafting has been head-scratching to some degree, taking Cam Johnson really high when people thought he was a second rounder. He took him in the middle of the first round. But ultimately, you have Booker, you inherited Booker, who's an elite level player. You drafted Ayton, who, again, now you look back on it and say, well, you shouldn't have drafted Ayton, but ultimately he's still a pretty darn talented big. So you've got your point guard, your wing, and your big, and you filled it in with guys like Mikal Bridges, who can really score, 3-and-D guy, and Cam Johnson, who can really shoot. And you've just got and those guys know their role. They accept their role. Jay Crowder, when he comes back, will accept his role. But ultimately, Chris Paul, I don't know if you guys and we've talked about this much, but I really haven't gotten along with Chris Paul over the last few years. We'll tell that story at some other time.
Yeah, okay.
It was involving a story I wrote on him and Donald Sterling years ago. But I respect the hell out of him, because what Chris Paul does is he brings it every single game, every single practice. No matter what, he conducts himself like he goes on the court and it's game 7 of the NBA Finals, no matter when he goes on the court. And I think that rubs off on these other guys, you know, Devin Booker. You can't take a day off. You got to show up every single day. Where maybe when he was younger, like, he didn't know who were his role models, who were his leaders to learn that from. So I think ultimately that's where Chris Paul, it comes into play as much as anything. However, Bob, as we know, the knock on Chris Paul has been what?
Just they don't advance. He never gets deep in the playoffs.
Right. Can he do it? Is it going to be the same old story, Bob?
Well, to be continued, we don't know. But right now, based on what the way they're playing now, you'd have to say that nobody's going to be looking forward to playing the Phoenix Suns in the playoffs. No. That's all. Period.
No,
that's a measure of respect, and that's very good.
The Ryan and Goodman Podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I feel like it's now where we didn't think it was going to be this way, but now we're looking at, you know, what do we got? 3 weeks left in the season, something like that?
Yeah, right.
And LeBron's still not on the court. And are we now at a point or do we just think he's going to come back in the next couple of weeks? And now again, like, LeBron's not young anymore. So I don't know. Is it going to take him more time? Is he going to be back to what he was again? Or, you know, KD's done it, right? KD has been the model of, like, he's not as old as LeBron, but he's in his early 30s and he's just come back from major injuries. Like nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, he is a phenomenon in that regard. And I got myself and it's set off a little Twitter thing, which is, I deliberately did it on purpose to see what kind of reaction.
Did KD come at you? Did KD tweet?
Oh, no. I was praising him. I said that some people, there's a certain few people that for whom the game looks so natural and easy, it flows out of them. And Kevin Durant is such a player, and I can't think of another one. Oh, well, now all these, and I mean it. Yeah. Not the way I'm speaking. And I, you have to, the game just seems so no hurried movements ever. No rush, no muss,
so
no
smooth.
Fuss.
So yeah, smooth.
It's flowing, yeah. You know. All right, people come up, you know, the names I got, Iceman. You know, all right, that's not too, the game, I can understand you saying that.
Yep.
But other, somebody, the people say, oh, Steph. Hey, all that dribble, that's work. I'm
right.
Sorry. That's exactly. That's his game.
A lot of herky-jerky. Right.
That's work. And I'm not that's not an insult. Right. And it doesn't mean to imply that that Kevin Durant doesn't work hard. He makes it look easy.
Yeah.
The game is just
well, he can dribble. He can take one dribble and he gets it and just rise up.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, he just floats. Yeah. You know, if you want to go, there's a guard in history that I used to say he doesn't jump, he levitates, okay? That would fit this description in his time.
Yeah.
Dave Bing. Dave Bing had that capacity, okay,
really?
Among guards. And very few guards. Guards can't have it. They got to dribble. They got to do that. But Dave Bing did. You know, he was a hybrid. You know, he was not really either he was a point guard who could shoot or he was a two who could make a pass. He was a player. You know, but anyway, he was a graceful, beautiful player.
KD is like,
who's like
so unique? He's so unique as a player. Like, people want to, you know, I talked to him a few years ago about this, and I said, I'm like, you know, don't you feel like you've changed the game for big men? And he didn't even realize it at that point. I'm like, well, I said, you've kind of hurt the game in a way because every big man wants to go out and shoot threes now. And then I think I was talking to him a little bit and we're talking about Dirk.
Dirk
kind of the first guy like that. And he was, but Dirk didn't have what KD had. I mean, come on, not even close in terms of.
Like, Dirk's got his own niche.
Right.
Dirk's got the step back. Dirk has his own niche.
Yeah.
This is Kevin Durant's niche to me, you know, among all. It's just an aesthetic argument. It has nothing to do with substance. People.
Right.
Don't understand, you know, so maybe I should have just forgot the whole thing, but it was fine. Anyway, he came back and he got 33 points in 28 minutes and he made it look like, yeah, what injury? What,
right.
What rest? What he, oh, it was stunning.
Well, you wonder now if he and a lot of these players, especially in the last year or so, are saying to themselves, all right, you know what? And watching Kawhi do it a little bit. Like, I'm not going out there unless I'm 100% now. I'm not putting myself at risk. I understand the end game, which is the postseason in my career, where, you know, back in the 80s, what would guys have done? They would have played through everything. They did. A lot of guys just played through everything. It didn't matter what the injury, unless they absolutely couldn't. But if they were banged up, if they could get out there, they got out there.
There was no discussion about it. You just did. And, you know, the sport, of course, where it's crazy, it's football, you know, where this mentality had, you know, as we've matured in life, it had to change. But basketball had a measure of it. And they used to kid about baseball players, you know, because they didn't seem to have that, you know, that capacity the way, as a rule, you know, and with football and hockey, you had to
have a hangnail. It's like a hangnail, Bob, and baseball players are out for weeks.
Yeah, but you had to have that mentality. But anyway, people are more aware now, I think, and I think it's rational. I have no problem with this.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I mean,
in the playoffs, you got to suck it up all the way to a degree, fine. But in this regular season, no.
it's worked. It's worked for a lot of these guys, and they see it working for Kawhi. And, you know, again, we'll see what happens with LeBron coming back here and when he comes back. I mean, Anthony Davis probably came back at the right time, right? I mean, he's going to have a month.
Apparently, he had a good game last evening after his initial. Obviously, he didn't shoot well the first day, but, you know, I didn't. But they did. But he had an impact at the defensive end. I know for a fact in that game. And, you know, brought that right back to the table. He's an extraordinary player, you know. But you're alluding earlier about LeBron. Hey, the Lakers are going to enter the playoffs as a mystery guest. Yeah. And to a degree, so are the Nets, which is going to make this, you know, that's good.
They're intriguing. Going
to be questions when we enter, you know, right now the clock's ticking and the Nets have had those three guys together for 7 games. That's all we know so far. And the clock is ticking as we winding down toward the end of the regular season. So, you know, there's no certainty there.
Well, and the Lakers, I mean, if they stay where they're at, they'll get a Denver team that won't have Jamal Murray.
Won't have Murray.
In the first round. Yeah. So, you know, you get a little fortunate here. If you get LeBron back soon, you get them, and then you get Utah in the second round, potentially. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like looking at it, like, who are you still scared of if LeBron's LeBron and AD's AD? Are you scared of anybody? I mean, is anybody capable of really knocking him off?
Well,
or is everybody capable of knocking
him off? Well, I think it's more possibly that. I think we're going to find – there's going to be pressure on Utah. They finished with the best record. You know, now I don't know how much the pressure is going to be, you know, local or just general basketball world community pressure. But, you know, okay, you did what you did, fine. Now that's, you know, I think they'll be, you know, see how they react to that.
So if you have to handicap the West to me right now, give me the Bob Ryan power rankings now in the West.
Well, I would have to say Utah won.
All right, so going into the playoffs, you're telling me.
Wait.
Bet your house on it, Bob Ryan. Bet your house right now, on it.
Okay, no.
Who's your money on?
All right. Of the known quantities, Clippers.
Clippers won.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, it, depending on health, though, obviously. But I said the Lakers are a mystery guest.
So you're going Lakers too. As long as LeBron comes back, Lakers are two.
Yeah. And then I have to go. Then I got to go. You know, I would love, I would have gone Denver if, you know, but you can't do that. So we got to go with Utah then. You know, we got to, I don't know how deep I want to go with this. I haven't.
You want to go Phoenix 4?
I'm just want to think if I'm ignoring someone that I shouldn't be ignoring. But no, I not mean, Portland. No.
Dallas.
Not Dallas, not Sin. No, all right. So I'll go
Dallas or Denver.
Yeah, well, Denver with Murray, I might have had them too. But
all right, so that's your West Conference power rankings 1 through 4. We got Clippers, Lakers, Utah, Phoenix. Now do it in the East, Bob. Do it in the East. 1 through 4.
I mean, the Nets are such a. I'll go Nets. I'll say it's going to happen. All right,
Nets.
I'll go Nets.
Two.
I'll go Nets. Sixers. Milwaukee, Miami.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of with you on that one. Like, I don't have a problem with these. I would still say one for me in the West. As long as LeBron's on the floor, I'm going Lakers in front of Clippers. Now, again, you need to see it, but I'm assuming he's going to be back with, you know, a week under his belt, and LeBron's LeBron.
Yeah.
I don't. You know, and I do think it's going to be, again, like, you know, health is going to determine this year as much as anything. We said it last year, right? Like, the Lakers were healthy when it mattered last year.
Yeah.
They were healthy. Most of the teams were actually healthy down the stretch last year when it mattered. I don't know if that's going to be the case this year. I feel like this year is just different. Maybe guys are pacing themselves. It just seems like more guys are banged up. Taking time off.
I mean, I mentioned that, you know, and Simmons just came back last night after a lengthy, you know, and so he's got to get back in. It's going to be a lot of, there'll be some weird stuff will happen there. But I want to see what happens to Utah if they get down 0-2 or 3-1 or something.
I just don't trust them.
Yeah, I mean, they got to show us.
I just don't trust them. I can't believe they're 44-17. Like, I can't. I just don't. But again, so much of it this year is about, well, a team like Utah is playing like every game matters. And they've had their guys for the most part this year.
Yeah. Now Mitchell's a big key, obviously.
I don't like 7-game series. Who are you taking, Phoenix or Utah? Like, aren't you taking Phoenix? No.
Well, they're fresh in my mind. They lost to the Nets, but that was a good game for about 40 minutes, and then the Nets asserted themselves, and then Phoenix won in New York last night. I mean, I would. Yeah, that's a toss-up.
Yeah, I'll go Phoenix. In my West Coast power rankings, I'll go Lakers, Clippers, Phoenix, Utah.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to put up a big fuss.
I think it's going to be fun, though. I'm looking forward to the playoffs this year, and I didn't think that would be the case. It's almost like a silver lining in a way that LeBron has been out, because if he hadn't been and the Lakers are tearing it up, it's just kind of like that, okay, ho-hum. You know, they're going to win another one. They're going to find a way. Now, at least you've got questions there. You've got questions with the Nets because, again, Harden, who knows how he's going to be when he comes back. And, are KD and Kyrie enough? And those dudes, Harden's hurt. We know KD and Kyrie's track record of injuries. You never know if you're going to get them every night. So I think, again, you've got a lot of question marks going into the NBA playoffs. I can't wait till it gets here, to be honest. I can't wait. all right, let's.
We would have been in them in better days. We would have been in them already.
Yeah, no doubt.
This episode of the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast is brought to you by LinkedIn. 2021 is looking up. New beginnings means new opportunities to grow your business. And if part of your strategy is adding new members to your team, well, LinkedIn Jobs finds that right person very quickly. To make things better, your job post is absolutely free. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free when you head over to linkedin.com/scribe. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 722 million members worldwide. Getting started is easier than ever with new features to help you find qualified candidates quickly. Post a job with targeted screening questions and LinkedIn will quickly get your role in front of more qualified candidates. As functions are streamlined onto one simple screen, and now you can do this from your mobile device. No matter where you are, no matter where the day takes you, that's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. And let's face it, a hell of a lot easier, right? When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/scribe. Again, that's linkedin.com/scribe to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. So what else? Let's talk about a little bit about college basketball now. We don't have to go into a lot, but a little bit about the transfer portal and all these kids that are declaring for the draft right now. So you got about the number somewhere, I haven't counted it in a week, but it's got to be 1,300 plus right now scholarship kids.
I can't wrap my head around that. I'm sorry. I mean, this whole change in the world, the way the world is now in college basketball, the transfer portal, it's hard to wrap my head around how anybody can be comfortable coaching at the high level in that top 100.
They have no choice.
You know, I know.
Not even high level. How about the mid-majors? Every
when you're being disrupted. Yeah.
Exactly. They get plucked.
Yeah.
So here's my question to you. Here's my question to you. And I had a little bit of a conversation with somebody on Twitter last night about this, who said, players should have the option to transfer and not sit out, which is the rule now. There's a one-time transfer.
It's a temporary rule, though, right?
No, it's going to be forever. It's going to be. It's going to be in there. Now, you can only do it once in your career.
Okay, that's the thing. Yeah. Yes, I understand.
But you can do it at any point. You don't have to sit out. Yeah. Okay. So the big thing for me is it's good for the kids, Bob. It's obviously good. Why should the kids have restrictions? I understand that thought process. The only thing I'll say to that is what's good for the kids doesn't necessarily mean it's good for college basketball and the fans who are going to have a complete revamp of their team for the most part, other than teams like Belmont who return everybody next year. But a lot of teams are going to be completely new. And the other part of this that people aren't going to talk enough about is with that turnover which I think is going to be like 50% or above overall in college basketball for every team, you're going to have poor play, poor quality of play early on in the season, maybe even beyond early. It might bleed into the conference play. Who knows? So what's good for the kids doesn't mean it's good for college basketball.
I'm just not comfortable with the whole thing. And I'm wondering what the fallout's going to be. And even my own personal reaction, as you said, I'm a fan of the sport. It's made a lot to me. My two foundation sports on my whole life work of being a sports writer were Major League Baseball and college basketball. Yep. And as you know, I was introduced to the Palestra 3 years before the Big Five was even formed.
Yes.
That's my roots. Okay. Yep. And I'm very proprietary toward college basketball. And I'm saddened. I'm uncomfortable. It's forever altered and not in a good way. I'm sorry. I understand, to a degree, but I would have to say this. When you say that you understand the kids have a right to, well, some have more of a right than others. What percentage of them, Jeff, do you think? And I don't expect an answer. I'm being rhetorical here. But what percentage of these transfer kids are simply impatient, unrealistic about their circumstance and just didn't have the stick-to-itiveness they should have had where they were, as opposed to kids who have a really legitimate reason, the need to want to transfer? I'd like to know the answer. Because I'm not comfortable with this at all.
You know what the crazy part is? Is that there are a bunch of players now, believe it or not, that transferred. Like a kid named Kevin Marfo. He was at Quinnipiac, transferred to Texas A&M. And now he's transferring back to Quinnipiac. There were like 7 or 8 of those kids.
Is that right?
Boomerang. We should try to do that. We should try to get – maybe I'll try to get a podcast, try to get a couple of kids.
That's interesting.
It'd be interesting, right?
No, this is interesting. It's such a complicated thing. And of course, you talk about the coaches and the escalation and the money. I keep going back when I was at Boston College, Bob Cousy, who took us to 2 NCAAs and 2 NITs when that really meant something in my 4 years there, was making $12,000 a year. Now, John Wooden retired in 1975, and I know for a fact he was making $35,000. And, where we are, it's just so unimaginable what's happened and the money.
I don't like it. I'm not saying I like it at this point. But I do. Here's why I think they did it. A big part of the reason that the NCAA allowed this is because they want to be able to say with name, image, likeness, well, look, we gave the players the one-time transfer waiver. So we're going to put up some guardrails with name, image, likeness. They don't want to pay these kids. They didn't want to do anything for name, image, likeness. They had no choice, but they're still going to fight it. And this is just a mess right now because you're going into a point when some of these states are going to allow kids to get paid for name, image, likeness. Yeah, there's no universal law in place or situation in place for the NCAA where, like, by now they should have this done. You shouldn't be dealing with each state.
They moved a glacier-like way, it's
painful it's, right now.
Well, the whole concept of the NCAA, let's come back in 10 years and see, or 5, see where they are. I don't know. People have been hinting about the dissolution of it and the whole start from scratch nature, possibility of college sports. I want to go back and preach. I'm mounting the soapbox again, just for the hell of it. But no other country does this. And we're the only country that does this, that has its institutions of higher learning provide entertainment for the masses, which is what college, big time college sports are. And, we have to come to grips with the illogical nature of it, quite frankly. So there we go.
Yeah, I mean, listen, something needs to change here. And it probably starts with getting Mark Emmert out of there for the NCAA. I mean, how he's been protected this long is absolutely mind-boggling, but it's a good old boys club and former school president, other presidents protect them. And ultimately there needs to be a change in leadership now, like immediately to try to figure this thing out or else, it's been talked about for years. Jim Calhoun was the first one to tell me probably 10 years, 15 years ago. He was like, you know what? The big boys, they're going to break off. They're going to break off from the mids and the lows. And I think this one-time transfer rule is going to even heighten that, because all these guys feel like now they're just, you know, single A or double A schools. And every good player, they're going to lose for the most part. You know, even if you have a great relationship with that player, well, if you're in a mid-major or low major and a Kentucky, a Duke, even a, you know, Kansas State comes calling, well, how do you tell that kid, all right, yeah, stay here? If he's been there 2-3 years, how do you tell him? I mean, honestly, like, if you're that kid, you're probably, Bob, saying, you're the coach of that kid, go take a shot at it at this point. You know, play high major basketball.
If they were to do that, that would be the complete parallel to what the European soccer world was going through, yeah, with the 12 power guys,
right,
forming their own super league. You know, fascinating.
Hey, what do you think of your boy Kevin Love last night?
I'm so disturbed by it, because number one, anytime he does something irrational like that, you worry a little bit due to his documented history.
Yeah, I don't think you worry. I just think it was Kevin Love. Right. I've known Kevin Love since he was.
I want to like him. I want to like him. I always want to like his game. I want to like him. What he did was pick a indefensible number. It was indefensible. It was unprofessional. Right. And insulting.
He basically just threw the ball, inbounded the ball.
I urge people listening, go YouTube it or go Google it. You'll find it very easily. What he did is you ask yourself, and I often say we should be judicious with the use of the words always and never. I have never seen anything like this in not just an NBA game, but at any legitimate level of competition. So what he does is swat the ball right back and give them a basket. And you know, so how they go from here with this is what the question is. You know, I don't want to hear about his level of frustration with teammates and all that. You can't do this.
I mean, listen,
insulting.
You're making $31 million a year right now. $31 million. You've got a deal for still another 2 years at somewhere in that vicinity. Like, come on, man. Like, be professional.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't do that. I mean, no, you can't. So I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, he has to be reprimanded seriously in
they
some
can't
way.
Trade him. The problem is they've tried to get rid of him, but nobody wants that contract. Yeah. So you can't really get rid of him. I mean, I guess you could try to get pennies on the dollar and try to get rid of them. You're going to have to take on another crappy contract to be able to unload them.
No, it's a quandary.
But if you're Kobe Altman, you got to do something, because you don't want to go into next year. You've got some decent young players. And did you see Darius Garland's face?
No.
When Kevin Love did that last, I mean, it was a joke. Like, come on, you don't want him around Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, some of the other guys like Larry Nance Jr. who plays hard, plays the right way. If I'm Kobe Altman, I'm saying, you know what? Don't come back. You're done. We're going to try to trade you. Yeah. If we can't trade you, whatever. We'd rather lose without you than win.
No, you got right. I think that a very serious message or reaction has to take place here, or else I it's just disgraceful. It is disgraceful. It's just,
oh. Yeah. Yeah, no.
I feel bad. I've always wanted to like him and his game. And oh boy,
I've known Kevin forever. Kevin Love always kind of figured it out. I'll give you the ultimate example. First time I ever met him, we're in a crowd. He's like 14, 15 years old at ABCD camp in Teaneck, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and there's about five or six of us around talking to him, and he was like the big thing then. And at the end of it, he knew my name and other people's names and thanked us, you know, thanks Jeff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, 14 or 15 year old, like getting it. He was ahead of his time that way. He and I haven't talked in boy. The last time we talked, I think we played blackjack in Vegas 10 years ago,
oh, yeah.
But we don't remember when he came out a few years ago to Boston. And like Rondo,
yes,
met him. Remember they were luring him the Celtics tour.
I do recall. So
I texted him as a reporter should a couple times when I heard he was coming out, and through an intermediary, he was upset that I texted him multiple times. And I'm like, all you got to do is tell me, like, whatever. Hey, I'm coming to Boston, but don't report it, or just get back to me and say, hey, Jeff, I can't say anything. Like, I'd known him since he was 14, 15 years old. Like, just be a man. Just be a man about it. And he never did. So I'm done.
Well, we'll be curious to see how the Cavaliers react to this. Because
yeah, again, if I was Kobe Altman.
Can't just lay there.
I'd wash my hands of them. Because, again, you want those young guys to have good role models in that locker room. I mean, they're trying to figure that team out and see if they can get them where they're competitive again. But, man, for $31 million, I'd play hard. I'd lock in and play hard and do it for the pride as much as anything else.
Well, people, you got to go check this one out. You've never seen anything like it.
Hopefully we will not be talking about that again next week, Bob. thanks to everybody for joining us. Another episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast. We will be back next week. Make sure to watch the pod on our Twitter accounts. Make sure to download the pod and listen to it on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you listen to it. And give us your feedback as well. But thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.